Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is Tuesday, July 7th, 1998. In the Koinonia Fireside Room this evening is the forum titled, How Should Christians Think About Life-Enhancing Drugs and Procedures? Or Would Jesus Approve of Viagra? The session number is 98-9. Let's listen in.
Welcome, everybody, to this evening's forum here at Holden Village. My name is Mark Schwain, and I'm serving as the summer teaching staff coordinator, one of two. I'm going to say a little bit about, for those of you new to the village and who haven't been to a forum before, what forums are designed to do and what we've set up as the format for this summer's forums. Forums are designed basically to put something out on the table that is perplexing, possibly controversial, often both, and to invite villagers to think about it together through a mode of conversation. We don't think of the forums as a debate so much as we do as a time to reflect on matters that sooner or later will affect all of us, and that we need some kind of common communal discernment to make our way through them. In fact, last night we had a sort of mini version of this with the summer teaching staff this week, and we went on for an hour and 15 minutes and admitted at the end that we ourselves were quite puzzled about what to say about this matter. Let me just say a word about what this matter is, and then our method, and then go into our narrative. The deep background for this was a coincidence that took place a couple years ago, which was that Time and Newsweek came out at the same time with two very different covers. The Time cover says, with a picture of a sort of vaguely androgynous looking, I think, female, who's looking vaguely androgynous, how science is searching for ways to keep us forever young. And that same issue, Newsweek issued a cover in contrasting colors, which talked about teaching us how to die, with exclusive excerpts from Cardinal Bernardine's Final Testament. So one could talk about all kinds of contrasts here, but what's joined here in this remarkable coincidence of covers in our major news magazines is in some sense the project, which is well underway in many, many ways, of holding out the prospect of immortality or eternal youth or the fountain of youth, et cetera, on the one hand. And on the other hand, someone like Bernardine and many other Christians who think that it's important to not only acknowledge finitude, but really to be about the business centrally of assisting folks to face up to that, acknowledge it, and make their way through their own deaths. So that's the big, broad issue, but at Holden this summer, we're trying an experiment, which is to simply take a very specific, concrete case study about something and unpack it and have a few folks play roles. We have a couple folks who are going to play roles tonight, which gives us a very concrete focus on what is a very huge issue. So the issue tonight isn't so much Viagra as the whole project, of which that's just a tiny part of holding out the prospect of keeping us forever young or prolonging indefinitely our 80 years. And what do we make of that? And as the title suggests, how should Christians think? How should they think about life-enhancing drugs and procedures? Or, and then we come now narrowly to this particular case history, would Jesus approve of Viagra? And let me read you the case history and then introduce to you a couple of the principals here who, remember, are role-playing. Mrs. Lotta Love, a woman of 70 years, is on a crusade. Her husband, a man of 75, began taking Viagra regularly 6 months ago, a practice that Lotta never particularly welcomed. Soon thereafter, Mr. Love was feeling and acting in many ways, some good, some bad, like an 18-year-old. But after 3 months, things turned tragic. Mr. Love had two extramarital affairs with women half his age. And a month ago, he was found dead of a massive heart attack in the aftermath of one of these illicit liaisons. Mrs. Love filed suit. Mrs. Love filed suit against Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, claiming that their drug Viagra led directly to her husband's death and alienated his affections from her through its predictable psychological and physical effects. She also founded an organization called LOVE, which is an acronym for Lessen Our Viagra Enthusiasm, designed to restrict, and here it's important to pay attention exactly what she's after, to restrict the use of Viagra to strictly therapeutic purposes. That is, to correct dysfunctions that are due to disease, surgical complications, or psychological trauma. That, she thinks, is fine. But not to enhance or to prolong indefinitely the life of sexual activity in men. Quote, Viagra, said Mrs. Love, should not be used to reverse the natural effects of aging or to violate the human life cycle. It is good that men's sexual appetites and potency should diminish over time, unquote. And we have a lot of Love here to my immediate right. Just down the row a bit, Mrs. Love's brother-in-law, Fuller Love, opposes this organization. He believes that his brother died happily. Quote, why oppose anything that makes life better? He asks, would we try to eliminate knee replacements, cornea transplants, and arthritis drugs because they, quote, reverse the natural effects of aging, unquote? Would you join Love? More importantly, and here's really the question, what kinds of questions should Christians ask themselves and one another as they consider together whether to use or to support the development of an allegedly life-enhancing drug or procedure? How should Christians go about thinking about this whole big issue? But let's hear, first of all, from Lotta Love, and then from Fuller on this issue.
Well, thank you very much for giving me this forum, and I'm hoping I can persuade some of you to join Love, Lessen Our Viagra Enthusiasm. But let me first start by telling you about Herman. When he was 50, he bought a red Porsche. When he was 60, he bought a jet ski. When he was 70, he bought a Harley Davidson. And when he was 75, well, that's when Viagra came out, and you know how that story went. Now, through all these years, I wanted him to enjoy life. He was a good husband most of the time, especially before he started to, before he passed middle age. But he was always pushing the boundaries of life. This bothered me, partly the risk, whether the motorcycle, the jet ski, or the Viagra, the risk bothered me. The sense that this was somehow unfitting and kind of not right for someone of his age. But also these were all things that took him away from me. We could have had a comfortable number of golden years together. We were financially comfortable and we had wonderful grandchildren around us, and I thought it was time to enjoy that which we had earned over the years. In fact, even our marriage seemed to me okay. I mean, there weren't the old pyrotechnics, you know, no fireworks, but there was a real warmth and closeness that included marital relations. And I'm sorry that it wasn't enough for Herman. It was enough for me. I thought we were okay. I guess he didn't. And you know what happened. Now, it just seemed to me that this whole episode with Viagra, which was a refusal to accept his stage in life, was neither normal nor good. It seemed to me that he was resisting the normal, natural course of life through which people move, in which one age is different than another. I have my Bible open to Psalm 90, which includes the passage that our moderator quoted, "The days of our life are 70 years, or perhaps 80 if we are strong." And we were doing fine at 75, and I just don't know why he had to think he was 25. It seems to me that acceptance is a much more fitting attitude, and indeed gratitude, joy, that we were at that age able to lead a full life that was a loving life. And I wondered who to blame for this aberration in Herman's self-image and this pursuit of eternal youth that he seemed to be on. And I decided to blame corporations like Pfizer Corporation and the other multinationals that seem to me are trying to make money out of our desire to deny our finitude and even our mortality. Some of these corporations, of course, make movies, and you know, which are full of movie stars who have had costly, plastic surgery and who deny the fitting kind of beauty that comes with older people. Some of these are pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer, which claim they can overcome every one of our problems, and so that now, for instance, women much older than I are, women well past middle age are thinking that they should have children, and they can. This may be the female form of Herman's male denial of limits. And even young people, even the strongest, the most beautiful and wonderful young people seem unable to accept their limits. So that you'll have Olympic athletes who are just at the pinnacle of athletic achievement who will take the risk of steroids and other drugs and injury-producing kinds of things, which it seems to me are a way of saying that being human is not enough. Being a beautiful, God-made human being, able to run very fast, but not perhaps faster than any creature ever has, that should be enough. And it seems to be not enough for us now in our culture, and the advertising tells us this, and the movies tell us this, and medicine seems to tell us this, and it just seems that we have forgotten that we should be grateful as human beings for what we are and how God made us. So I invite you to join love. It seems to me that a life that is enhanced is not a life enhanced by Viagra, enhanced by steroids, enhanced by plastic surgery. Life that is enhanced is life that is full of love. And that's why I chose the acronym LOVE for lessen our Viagra enthusiasm. And if you think about it, it could also mean lower our voracious appetites. And or love our venerable excellences.
Thank you very much. Now, we ordinarily try to avoid family feuds here at Holden as part of the forum, but I'm afraid we have in our midst Lotta's brother-in-law, Fuller, and he, as you heard, opposes love, and so we're going to hear now from Fuller as to why he opposes this movement.
Thank you. First of all, Mr. Moderator and Lotta, I would like to say that I'm just absolutely thrilled. Months ago, this whole conversation would have been nothing but a muddle for me, or with the new hearing aid. Which I've been able to purchase, and through the genius of medical science, I can now hear all the words well. It's actually better than it used to be because I can turn it down at the appropriate point. I also, let's just start Herman. And Herman is, of course, his given name, but I always called him by his nickname, which was Nixon. He was always a very energetic person, even as a lad. He loved the outdoors, he loved hiking and playing ball. He loved being and feeling young. And I certainly will admit, Lotta, that as he approached middle age, he acted on a variety of occasions pretty silly. I thought the red Porsche was quite a mistake, especially given the strapped finances. Some of which, as I remember, were a function of the facelift, which Nietzsche at least told me you had. his 3 month bout with bungee jumping was really more than I could take at the time. But I thought that the Viagra was different. I thought, like cornea transplants for the eye, or hearing aid for hearing, that his sexuality was something which to him was quite central. That it wasn't a frill, it was something which was in many ways at the center of his being. He was quite frustrated about his sexuality and just absolutely thrilled when the ads came out about this new drug. You'll remember he tried to see if his health plan would cover it, because it's an expensive drug. And after months and months of thinking about it, as you know, the HMO that he belonged to decided to turn down those requests. So I know that his taking the drug was a monetary drain. But I think that just goes to show how important it was for him to feel this increased sexuality. Now, granted, what happened afterward with these younger women was regrettable. Certainly it was not his intention initially, that that was the purpose for taking the drug, but it was just to feel young and vital again. And I think that's important. Was important for him, as and is important for many men his age. As you know, I was born some 30 years after my mother's. But that's the way he felt about it. He was upset that you were upset. That was he did not want to upset you. He was chagrined that it upset you. And who knows if it was that additional frustration that led him to these other things. So I would just invite people not to join the organization Love. And I thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, it's up to the rest of you to either cross-examine or question some of the folks who've spoken or talk among yourselves. I have already one villager who's come forward who I'd like to have him introduce himself and tell about his own work, who has actually, in real life, grappled with this problem as a healthcare provider. So I agreed to let you speak first.
Oh,
why don't
okay.
you introduce yourself and tell us.
And I'm not actually as a healthcare provider, as a consultant with a healthcare organization that was grappling with the issue of whether or not to pay for Viagra as a covered benefit. And rather than take that perspective, I would rather just, I'll throw up my own personal feeling, which is that, I understand your concern about what your husband went through, Ms. Love, and I reject the notion that there is some normative life experience. While I think in the case of your husband, as somebody who's trained in psychology, he clearly had some unresolved issues. I think that and that his use of the drug may not have been actually in his best interest from a personal or health or whatever other perspective you want to talk about. I think that the general problem is, and this is the problem that healthcare organizations are struggling with, are these various scientific advances, do we have, as Einstein said, the social and moral capability to keep up with the technology that we're presented with? And in this case, healthcare organizations are having to ask an even finer grained question, which is, what is good health? What is quality of life? And how do we measure quality of life from a aggregate or normative standpoint, or so, you know, large community standpoint, when ultimately we all believe we have our own best ideas about what that is? So I don't have any grand conclusions, but I think that in the case of your husband, he made the choice that for his quality of life, this is what he wanted to do. And how, I'm not sure we should stand in judgment of that.
Well, I understand your perspective. Let me just continue, however. I mean, are any of us an island in these decisions? Is any person an island? Is it simply a matter of personal choice to go for what we think we want, especially when our desires are so corruptible by this culture of eternal youth and unlimited consumption and, you know, sex all the time and no stopping us? I mean, is it simply up to, can we, each one of us, let's not suppose we have the right to do that, but is it good that each one of us should think, first of all, what we want when we make decisions of this sort? Surely at least the spouse should be involved in a decision of this sort. And but what about also so many of these very costly life enhancements take resources also away from those who need other kinds of care? I mean, you know, we can get all kinds of, you can spend thousands of dollars helping a 65-year-old woman have a baby, maybe millions, I don't know, and you know, hundreds of thousands of people don't have proper prenatal care.
Those are two different questions. I mean, I think I absolutely agree, and in the case of the health plan that I was working with, they did not believe the resources should be diverted for conditions other than those in the way that Mark was talking about earlier.
Right.
But that's a different question as a social good question about how we allocate resources from the individual question of if a scientific...
I grant that, and I don't want to turn the forum to the question of resource allocation, except to say that I do really challenge from a moral and Christian point of view whether thinking first of all of one's own desires without critiquing the image of the human being that is held up by this incredibly greedy culture, without questioning that image of the human being, whether what I want is what should govern these kinds of life enhancements.
Okay, good. Well, let's hear from some other folks.
A real significant little phrase in the scenario, as Mark read it there, if I got it right, as I wrote it down here, was that Herman began taking Viagra, and I think it read, a practice that Mrs. Love didn't particularly welcome. Is that, did I get that?
Mm-hmm. That's correct. Mm-hmm.
But I also asked, I did say we were having marital relations. It's not, he was not dysfunctional, but there was a sense this wasn't enough for him.
Mm-hmm. You know, so there was something that, in terms of his sexuality and your sexuality, mm-hmm. that the two of you hadn't managed to somehow communicate or come to some meeting of the minds on about that aspect of your relationship.
Well, alas, I guess I didn't realize at the time how profound that difference was, but I guess that's true.
Well, that's, yeah, and that's sort of maybe the tip of the iceberg of this whole issue of unintended consequences that I think underlies a lot of what we're looking at here. Just on the surface, there is an intended consequence. I mean, what other things are going to be set in motion by other things that result. How do we know what those are going to be? Is that a reason that never to innovate or never to try anything new or do anything because there might be unintended consequences? So.
Well, it sounds like you're bringing out a point that Mrs. Love has also already made, and I think it begins to hone in on some things we ought to talk through. The Viagra case, unlike maybe the knee replacement case, it has been suggested is an interpersonal issue, not simply a personal one, in that there are two kind of harmonies in Mr. Love's life that were apparently upset. One was the harmony between him and his wife, in that they were presumably experiencing a sexual life in which both parties were congruent in a certain sense, and now this upset that balance. But it also upset the internal balance within his own body in that it accelerated one process, restored a certain degree of energy and potency, but obviously didn't do the same thing for his heart, so that there were kind of an internal disharmony here leading to his death, as well as a sort of external disharmony between him and his wife, thus the alienation of affections. So I'm just wondering, as over and against the suggestion, which is close to the center of a certain American view, namely that it's his personal choice, I'm wondering if this is a case, leaving aside for a moment the issues that Fuller introduced of cornea transplants and knee transplants, in which it had to be a sort of interpersonal joint decision as opposed to an individual one. And is that at least one criterion in this case which Christians should think about as at least one of the things that they should ask that people think through, the effects on others? Can we hear people on those issues?
I definitely think that since taking Viagra changes the relationship between two people, that making a unilateral decision to take it is not appropriate. That there should be couple counseling and agreement before this.
Others on this point? Yes.
I would agree with that, but I think isn't the issue here legality, making this a law, a public law? And I would certainly disagree with that.
Making what a public law?
Viagra for the purposes that Mrs. Long is.
Oh.
Now, she's, for those purposes.
Yeah, she's restricting it to certain purposes, and you think that that would be, you want to say a little bit more about why that
would be? I think it would be too invasive. Hmm. For American people. I don't think we would tolerate that. Now, we had issues along similar lines, I think, back in the 60s, and there was some dangers, and there still are, on drug use. And I can appreciate laws for the general public that restrict that, but I don't think we're talking about the same sort of public safety issue here.
Four.
I'm not so sure that Viagra versus all of the other things like cornea transplants is quite so easily sorted into interpersonal and personal. With a married couple, all of those things have interpersonal components to them. If the spouse with bad hearing refuses to get that improved when it's possible, that is going to take a toll on the relationship. Having a healthy knee, again, whether the person with the bad knee either chooses to do it or not to do it, that has some impact on the relationship as well. So I grant the difference that Viagra is more intensely interpersonal, but all of them affect both parties to the relationship.
Yes.
Concern I would have, if we draw the line somewhere with this drug, does that then stop up the whole pipeline of new drugs that we might want? I mean, what is that? Where does that put us in terms of research and where it goes? It seems to me a better role for those of us in the church, as well as individuals who are affected by this, would be to push for better education about new drugs and the effects that they might have on us, as opposed to saying, absolutely, you can't go any further than this. I'm quite fearful that we'd be doing something that would affect us down the road that we would be unhappy with.
In the area of healthcare, the notion of informed consent is a long and strong precedent. The notion being that before somebody consents to a treatment, they be informed about what the consequences and potential unintended consequences or secondary consequences might be. When I was talking about our inability or our lack of social and moral advance to match our scientific advance, it gets to this point, which is that I don't think we can stop, or should we stop, the advance of science. I don't think it's possible to do that. But what we can do is try to raise the other side of the equation and see if we can educate ourselves, be it as Christians or as people, you know, bring the more, not just look at the secondary effects, the secondary health effects, or psychological effects, but what about the moral effects? I mean, to have informed consent include what is the personal, social, moral consequence. And increasingly, there are ethicists who are involved in these kinds of decisions with families, and I think we have to support that so that, be a Christian or whatever, there is that moral examination of what is the consequence of either individually choosing to do this or as part of an FDA procedure. What is the social moral consequence of releasing this drug or this treatment into society? We don't have that education. We don't put the money into that kind of education. We have ads in Time and Newsweek for Viagra. That's where the money's going. Mm-hmm. Woman was here last week.
We don't have the research to base the education on yet. What are the social and...
But we don't invest in that kind of research. There was a woman here who works for Pfizer last week. She said in the last 5 years, the amount of money by drug companies devoted to advertising directly to the consumer, okay, which is not education, folks. This is, you know, slick. Has gone up 100% in the last 5 years. 100% drug companies are spending more in the last 5 years to promote drugs directly to the consumer, not through the physician. So what does that do? What does that say about informed consent?
I have a couple of comments. You know, Ms. Love, you said that there should have been some conversation and maybe in the broader Christian community. The problem that I see with that is that if an individual can be easily deceived, it's also possible for individuals, a collective group, to be easily deceived. And then how do you know? I mean, it's the problem that we've always faced. In ethical formulation, mm-hmm. How do you know what's right? Mm-hmm. Second comment, several years ago, 10 years ago, more than that, I went to a workshop on aging by Marty Richards from Seattle. She's a consultant on aging to many of the nursing homes in the Seattle area. And her first question as she opened this thing was, how old is old? And got a whole bunch of different answers from the people who were there.
Did you say the question?
How old is old? A whole bunch of different answers. Some people said 70, 75, 90. And finally somebody said, well, old really depends on how you feel and think. And I think that has something to do with what we're talking about. If a person feels able to do it, I don't see any reason that they ought not to buy a jet ski at 70. You know? We can look at that and say, well, that's not appropriate. I mean, there's a greater risk. Certainly there's a greater risk. But isn't it that person's choice to take that risk? We in this environment we do hiking and backpacking and mountain climbing, and there's risk involved in all of those, and it's the person's choice to take that risk.
Okay, yes, up there.
Well, I kind of agree with some of the things that Mrs. Mick talked about, that there are certain principles that we as human beings ought both to understand and then choose it sometimes to obey. And I don't think personally that the final issue is what does the person want always.
No, I don't think so.
And the reason I say that is because I think as we grow older, there used to be roles that were given unto us for certain periods of our lives, roles that benefited the whole of society. And at least in the equation of whether one should spend money on a jet ski because they feel that way, or whether that same one has grandchildren for whom you have a role to fulfill, I think it's not one or the other, but it's both together. And I am getting a little concerned, and this is where I'm with Mrs. Lowe here, that if the only issue that we have is how does the person feel, and some of these most significant social roles have gone by the wayside.
Yeah.
And sometimes they go by the wayside among the aging people because the young people cease to listen to them anymore. Sometimes they go by the wayside for parents because the parents choose, you know, to kick up their heels and do whatever they please. But at some point, I think, as a society, as soon as we make a covenant to be communal, and as soon as we make a covenant by bearing children, if you will, to be parts of families, there are certain rules that we buy into whether we like it or not. And then when we cease to fulfill them, however we choose to cease, a lot of people suffer for that, even if the suffering is invisible and not recognized. I do think that's one of the things that happens in a society which wishes to be forever young. When all the old elephants were killed off, amazingly, and there were not three but two generations, no one knew how to teach the young ones where to walk. It's just a basic little thing, which only has to do with health, although I'd like to move into the spiritual realm now. And so the elephants themselves in certain parts of Africa got lost when it became dry, when they came into the dry season, because there was none of these old maternal grandmothers who remembered how to get through a terribly, terribly bad season. When our grandparents ceased to be grandparents to us, what do we lose? And that's just only one rule. Just to put it back into the whole issue of community. Communities make covenants, and they used to be very subtle, almost unspoken, and people picked up that job as they did. But now we have science, which in many respects frees us from those stuff. We don't need it. We've got a television. No one has to tell stories. So, I mean, some of the principles that she said, I agree with.
Okay, that starts to help us get into some of the principles and questions we should consider together before we make decisions about Viagra or other things. And there are a couple of hands back here.
Well, yeah. I think in today's society it's still important for the grandparents to act like grandparents. But just a clarification on what Viagra does. I understood that Viagra simply lets a man respond to sexual stimulation as opposed to creating sexual stimulation where it would not have otherwise been. I think that's an important distinction. Okay, if it's actually creating, you know, sexual excitement where none should be and none naturally lies, then that's a little more of a concern. But if it's simply, and I think this is the answer, I think that simply lets a man respond to sexual stimulation that's already there, what really is the harm? It's letting someone hear the noise that's there.
Is there a physician here who can?
That's right. And there, but it doesn't create libido. It creates an erection. And that's just the same as a device or an injection. So I suppose the sense that if someone who knows they can function and have erections, that might increase their libido, but it doesn't create libido.
And so your suggestion is, if it did create libido, then we would have a particular problem.
I think it'd be a larger moral concern if it created libido where there was none. Mm-hmm. It might make this even more interesting argument than it is. But I think all the idea actually does is permit a man to respond to sexual stimulation that's there. Mm-hmm. Now, back to the concept of, you know, it being important moral that he did with his wife. Okay, and if his wife no longer wants to respond to that sort of situation, then I think he's taking Viagra to accomplish something that has no moral purpose. Okay.
Well, that's very well put. I mean, it still does suggest that it may be in this case something that ought to be a joint decision.
Right. Now, if you make it illegal, no, I think clearly not, because it's too hard for the government to come in and restrict that sort of thing. But on a purely moral basis, sure, if he's taking Viagra to do something that there's no moral purpose involved, at least it doesn't involve his wife, then I think it's wrong. But I think in the vast majority of cases, I'm obviously no expert in this, and a consultant and a doctor can probably tell us a whole lot better, but my impression is that this is being taken in situations where the wife is more than happy, not the man.
Okay. That's helpful, because it helps to, again, define the people who have recommended education rather than laws. It helps to give some sense of what the community ought to do, the kind of questions it ought to raise, the kind of considerations it ought to introduce as part of that educational process. And a piece of that is that it be a joint decision in the case of a husband and wife, not an individual one.
I'm one of those people who believe that almost everything in life, if you're married, ought to be a joint decision with your spouse. So I don't see why this is much different than whether to buy the jet ski or whether to buy the Ferrari or the jet.
Okay, good. Yes, that's good.
I guess continuing some of the thing we're talking about here, where is the moral grounding and what is the Christian community doing to address these kind of choices that people have? Should you buy the jet ski or should you give the money to Habitat? Does everyone need a jet ski? Does everyone on all my cul-de-sac need a jet ski? Or do we share a jet ski or not buy a jet ski? And how we spend our money, we're addressing a culture of narcissism where it's all, you know, the idea that it's my choice, mm-hmm. it's my body, I can do with it what I want. Well, are there some more questions? I'm sure there are. You know, if it's just something to make me feel better, or if there's a psychological problem underlying that, if I just do this to my body, then, you know, I'm going to feel whole. Well, can I seek wholeness? There's another issue there. Mm-hmm. My sense of loss or my poor self-esteem or whatever is going on about Carmen. Is that an issue for a pastoral, spiritual issue for him? That he was not feeling whole as a person and mm-hmm. how is there a sense that the Christian community needs to also stand up and address some of these things, especially because we are bombarded with the consumer society commercials, and you know, we're just flooded with this stuff, and our kids absorb it like sponges without being able to weigh without being a moral question.
So the Christian community needs to cultivate some vision of what wholeness an authentic human life looks like, which will be countercultural such that these decisions then would have a whole different context and set of considerations. Not that it somehow predicts their outcome necessarily, but that it brings to bear on them a whole different image of what it means to be whole and human.
But that picture or profile of wholeness might not be a cookie cutter thing that's going to look the same in
Right.
Every single case, and, you know, maybe I want to have a red Porsche and you want to have a jet ski, does that mean that whole people?
You know, I'm thinking about how I present it. The Jewish perspective, which is where I come from, is that the question be engaged. That's
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
That wholeness occurs
good.
If the issue gets engaged. That's my whole thing about informed moral consent.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know from a Christian perspective if that's enough. Maybe you guys require a little bit more.
The main question that was asked, as I jotted it down here, again, I'm a voracious note taker, I guess, but how should Christians think about life-enhancing drugs and procedures as if there is a way that Christians should think? Again, a cookie-cutter kind of thou shalt not do sort of thing. I don't know, it seemed to me that the wrong question was being asked.
The intention behind the question was to avoid that. If we had wanted that, we'd have said, what should Christians think?
Okay.
I mean, as I said at the end, what kinds of questions should we be asking ourselves? How should we formulate the issue? Is there a way we would formulate it differently from the way the culture generally would? So I think the intention, the spirit behind the question was the very same for what you're looking for. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Don't we have to be very careful opinions as to how people at certain ages should act?
Yeah.
I know people that having a red Porsche makes them very viable members of a church community, you know. We all know other people who are very stagnant at an early age in their life. And sometimes this sort of excitement keeps them going. Now, we're not talking about the Viagra excitement, but other issues. And I just get concerned about putting people in pigeonholes. Mm-hmm. You know, you are a grandfather, therefore you will never drive a sports car again.
That's a great question, and that echoes your first comment about there is no norm, a yardstick about how people should act their age. Now, of course, we say this to kids all the time. I mean, just today I said, act your age, you know, to my son. So at the other end of the spectrum, we seem to have pretty good ideas of what it means to act your age. But you may well be onto something here, and others have registered it, that there really is, in midlife and later life, no sort of norm that we ought to expect people to conform to.
I am 55 years old and I have a 10 and a 12 year old. I should be a grandfather now, and I'm not going to be one tomorrow, I'll tell you that.
You and I are in the same boat, exactly. Yeah. Walt?
Well, a responding comment, which you would expect. It's not that you create cookie cutter things. It never was, and it shouldn't be, correct. It is that when you make certain social contracts, you obey them. When you say unto certain people, I'm going to be your parent, you should be a parent as long as they need that. And that's all I'm talking about. That what I do see is antithetic to that in this particular society, which is a society of narcissism, is that people seem to make decisions for other people and then loose those other people, just cut them free. They make babies, and then they don't care about not sacrifice, but this commitment to raising that baby. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who are in contracts. I would rather call the word covenant. And break those covenants because they have desires that are on their own. Buy your Porsche, but take your kid with you, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So what would you do in this case?
Well, the Viagra case?
Yeah.
I'd buy it.
Yeah.
No, that wasn't the question. No, I'm just fooling around, but I think... I would hold to the same thing, that there is a contract here. I would say what several people have said, that when you make a contract with another human being to live with her all your life, everything is involved in that. I mean, I would track back to that as well. And
but something happened here, and it was because it was a new drug, and maybe he started out trying to bring together a union that was slipping, but all of a sudden, because of the Viagra, his world expanded beyond his control, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, first Dorothy, and then Cheryl, and then Bruce.
Third, Lotta. Just very briefly, what kind of common wisdom is there for married people or single people or people of all states in the phrase to grow old gracefully? We kind of know what that means, but what is that? What is the place of gratitude in the overall configuration of the person? The gratitude to God, who we are, what we have, whatever that may be. You know, what is the place of acceptance? Not, you know, not premature, never mind hearing aid kind of acceptance, but at what point is acceptance a virtue, whether, you know, no matter what it is I have to accept? Those are questions that apply whether one's married or single, and I think have something to do with all of this.
Okay. Some additional questions. Yes.
I'm thinking about a critical question that I haven't heard yet, and that is, I would want to ask the question, who is really profiting from Viagra?
Don't mention that. I said it was the corporations.
I want to raise it as a critical question. This can be a critical question for us. Mm-hmm. We can make our decision by asking that question. I think that's a very important question. I don't hear about Pfizer offering to put Nicorette free on the market to get people off smoking. As a scientist, I question how supporting that industry affects the enterprise of science. That we're going to only pay for scientists to work on these kinds of drugs and not other kinds of perhaps more worthy and more critical
pharmaceuticals. And that raises the liability issue the gentleman over here talked about. They're not doing the research. They're not telling the end user the possible side effects. They're in for the quick buck for the, their shareholders at it. I think as part of our Christian perspective, we should take a hard look at this, the practices of some of these major corporations today. And if I understand what you were saying with love, what does that mean again? And exactly what are you advocating? Just responsible regulation? Is that what you're asking for? You're not asking, surely not to ban its use entirely, but only responsible use?
Yes, I think responsible medical use is fine. But actually the acronym of my organization, remember the other ones, Less Than Our Voracious Appetites, and Love Our Venerable Excellences. I think that this is just the opening ledge to a worldview shift that is consumeristic, narcissistic, greedy, to deny society needs. And I think that this is just the opening wedge.
Which plays into a capitalistic system run amok.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Are we talking about legislating morality here?
Mm-hmm. No, we're talking about a Christian community that is going to be better than the laws require us to be.
But the Christian community does not dominate the world and the corporate world.
No, but that doesn't let us off the hook of how we're going
to be. No, as Christians, yes, we have a moral responsibility and obligation to ourselves and to promote it and so on.
And to delight in living gratefully.
I get concerned about mandating.
This is a voluntary movement that's going to change the people rather than the change the society by changing the people.
No, that occurred in the conversation here, a presumption. Often when religious people talk, there's a presumption that we mean to be legislators.
Right.
And don't forget that morality is already being legislated. And we need to go back to the question the woman asked earlier, whose morality is being legislated. It is being legislated today by those who control where legislation and how legislation occurs. I'm not saying we should legislate morality, but it's being done. So let's not act as if it's not being done. Morality is being legislated already. It's just for those who have the power to control how legislation occurs. And I don't know that that's necessarily any value system that any of us would. I'm not going to go there. Whatever the value system is, it's certainly not one that I think most Christians I know would consider, congruent.
Mm-hmm. You were going to say something earlier? the criminal law in every country has always legislated morality. I think what we mean when we say you can't legislate morality is you sort of can't change necessarily people's moral feelings, but you can certainly legislate what they can and can't do, and a lot of them have more content. The distinction made before what the drug does, that doesn't create libido, I take the difference, but it doesn't seem to me to be morally decisive. And even if it were morally decisive, surely they're working on a second drug called Niagara, and this will then create libido.
I'm going to be up against this question, and all this does
is say maybe it's not quite this strong, but it seems to me to be the same question. And I had read that too as indicating that this group wanted to restrict it, as in the sense of passing legislation. I think we all kind of jump off the boat before that happened. But there's kind of a middle ground here, which bears looking at. This is a drug, this is a restricted drug, and it requires a prescription. Mm-hmm. So already law says there's, in addition to all the things we've been talking about, responsible use of it, talk among the family, talk among the community, voluntary efforts to get people to really think a second time before using it. From the scenario, this guy got some big prescription. So there's a doctor in there who is supposed to be having these conversations. I mean, this drug only works for a while, so this fling he's having for 6 months, he's got a big gobble of pills there. So part of the question is, how are doctors treating this? Are they dispensing this like candy? Or are they exercising some informed consent obligations that they have?
Their only responsibility is health side effects. They don't have the moral, they're not expected. I was throwing that out. Mm-hmm. But and then in many states, pharmacists, when the drug is actually given to you over the counter, also have a legal responsibility to tell you what those health effects are, but not any of this other stuff, not psychological or social or moral. Mm-hmm.
And the preliminary studies I read in the New York Times the other day were that the male is built in such a way so that when the warnings came out, this could have some cardiac effect. This had no effect at all on the demands for the drug.
If you've been denied that function in your life,
I'm not denying that. I'm just saying that particular health effect that the doctors are responsible for, making that statement has not seemed to have any effect on the demand for the drug at all.
Well, no, and what we're going to find out in all these lawsuits is that proof of a causal connection between the drug and these heart attacks is a real thicket there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be no connection so far, at least what I've heard the preliminary tests. I have read something in the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, of course, they're going to be the first ones to be able to see a lot of causal connections.
I think there's an interaction between Viagra and some heart medications.
I can tell you, I'm a stockbroker with a major firm, and our analysts, when that came out, and I've been promoting the stock for other reasons over the last 2 years, and when the drug came out, we still promoted it, and then when the problems came out with the heart attacks, they said, so what?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to have effect on the profits of the stock.
That's correct. It didn't have it. Let me try to bring this to a kind of not so much closure, but at least a kind of summary to some of the things we've gotten out, and then we'll have to adjourn. I said we're going to do it on time. We set out to basically try to get some of the questions on the table that we ought to be asking about this particular case and broadly the whole issue of life-enhancing drugs. And some of the themes that have come up are informed consent. Some of the themes that have come up have to do with the notion that some of these things may be properly joint decisions or involve communities, whether it's just a community of two or a larger discerning community that steps in between where the law stops, which many of us resist as the fundamental instrument, and where the professionals stop, that is just counseling about the health effects, and fills this middle ground having to do with the morality of the issue. And it's been suggested by several here that the Christian community might step in and raise up a set of questions. And we've heard what some of those questions might be in the context of a kind of education and getting people to think about what kinds of questions they should raise. And the whole question about whether something is more fitting for people past a certain age than for people before that age, that still remains a question. Or whether really one can't generalize at all about what seems fitting and appropriate to people in different chronological age categories. That seems to be still a very open question. But it does seem like people believe that there ought to be, if not a countercultural, then at least a preliminary suspicion about going along completely with what's being promoted through advertising and the whole industry that wants to invite all of us to believe we can deny our own mortality, and to, in a way, not think about how our decisions affect the lives of others who are near and dear to us. And not just near and dear to us, but the whole sort of allocation of medical resources has been brought up two or three times. Another issue that's come up, I think, is this whole issue of drawing lines. Who should do it? Should we look to the legislative process? There seems to be a lot of people wary of that. But then should we look to the economic process? After all, as he has pointed out, someone is legislating the fact that I, who take Zocor regularly, and that is covered by insurance, that's a cholesterol-reducing drug, that insurance decision was made that I am covered by that, so I can take that. Viagra isn't covered by that same insurance company, so someone there has drawn a line. I mean, someone has made a decision so that now economic rather than political or legal lines have been drawn. Yes, theoretically I'm still free to buy Viagra, but not really, as I am to buy Zocor. So what I'm saying is people are making decisions, taking economic or political or legal form, and so the fact is that we can't really abdicate making decisions. We need to be making them, and we need to be thinking them through together, and we need to be having conversations like this, not just about Viagra, but about all kinds of things that this particular Time magazine covers about how science is searching for ways to keep us forever young. And rather than to be defensive and reactive, it's best, I think, to be proactive and on top of these things and beginning to cultivate a conversation and defining some questions, which I think we've at least begun to do tonight. And I thank you all for your contributions in helping us do that. And have a good evening.